Well, good evening. I guess it is probably best for me to introduce myself. I don't think I've ever been here before, but I'm very thankful to be here and to be at this congregation, and I'm thankful for our brother for the song, so it's very great. And I'm encouraged to be here. I'm refreshed, honestly. My name is Micah McBride. I am 21 years old, came here with my lovely wife, Taylor. And I've been preaching for probably a year now, here and there. But I'm very eager and excited to be here and to present a message to you. And just two things before I start the lesson. I love to be practical in the way that I present the Word, because I think the Word is very practical. And so if I step on your toes tonight, I'm not trying to, and I don't have it out for you, but I do want to present to you the words of life. And I want to tell you the way in which you can best serve God is to listen to these words. So that's all I seek to do. And so if I'm very poignant with the language that I use, it is in love, and I just wanted to have that be known at the outset. But it is wonderful to be here, and I'm very eager to present this lesson to you. I'll be straight up. Tonight, I want to talk about and learn from Egypt. And I wonder, though, what comes to mind when you think of Egypt, or when the idea of Egypt crosses your mind? Is it maybe sand or mummies? That some of the things that I think about, or if you're like my mom, you probably think of some triangular-shaped prisms, probably some pyramids. Well, whenever the children of Israel thought of Egypt, one thing usually came to mind, the Exodus. It's this monumental event for the children of Israel where they were under the rule of this evil oppressor who God proved who was really in power to, and then save them from slavery. What an amazing story, right? It's an amazing story that we read about in the Bible. Let me ask you another question. How well do you remember that story? How well can you recount it? How often do you contemplate escape from Egypt? When you wake up, what's the first thing you think about? Is it escape from Egypt, or maybe escape from the bed to the coffee pot? How often do you think about this? And is this a story that is important to you? And I don't mean just in like a knowledge of the Bible way. I mean, like, is it important to your life? Well, if you're sitting here tonight, redeemed by the blood of our Lord Jesus Christ, then you should hold the Exodus story very near to your heart. Because the reality is that your story is painfully similar to it. So, I ask again, how important is that story of the Exodus to you? Is there a clicker? Got a clicker somewhere? Spacebar, gotcha. All right. Well, God knew that this event was important, and He constantly reminded the children of Israel about how He brought them out of Egypt. In fact, 90 to 100 times throughout the Old Testament, God reminds them of the Exodus so that they wouldn't forget truths about Egypt. And they start to glamorize it in their minds, glamorize their old slavery as freedom from the oppression of God's law. And so this evening, I want us to go back and remember Egypt, because Egypt still affects us today. The motif of Egypt is seen throughout the Bible, and when I say motif, that's just a $10 word to say like the idea or the theme, something that's drawn throughout something. And so the motif of Egypt, this theme, this idea, is really seen throughout the Bible. And it's important to note that the scriptures refer to Egypt literally almost as much as they do metaphorically. In Exodus, we see Egypt referred to in a way that is memorable to the Israelites and likely top of mind to you if you've read much of the Old Testament. The first part of the story of Exodus introduces us to the Hebrew people as they live in Egypt. That's where it begins. But not even 10 verses into the first chapter, the book of Exodus shows us this oppressive and shrewd king named Pharaoh, and how he feared that the Hebrews were growing in their strength and they had numbers. And so the scriptures say they ruthlessly made the people of Israel, talking about the Pharaoh and his servants, made the people of Israel work as slaves and made their lives bitter with hard service and mortar and brick and in all kinds of work in the field. The king of Egypt wanted to stamp out the people of God. And so he ordered the midwives to literally kill their male babies. And in a final attempt to assert his rule over these people as their God, he wouldn't allow them to leave Egypt to go sacrifice to the one true and living God. And so this was horrible for the Hebrews, and rightfully so. In Exodus chapter 2, verse 23, it says, "The people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help." And if it stopped there, this would be a sad enough story. But it says, their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and He heard their groaning. The Israelites were not safe in Egypt. They were constantly beaten into submission by a self-righteous and evil master. The people longed for liberation, and the Lord, as a loving God, had compassion on them. This is why Egypt becomes this place that's associated with oppression and bondage. Both literally, they had shackles on their hands and in their feet, but also metaphorically, they were restricted from doing this very good service, this righteous thing, sacrificing to their God. They were in bondage. In Deuteronomy 28, the Lord even uses this historical scar to threaten this reality back onto the people if they fail to keep the covenant. They're told at the end of the chapter, if they don't obey the voice of the Lord and carefully do as they're commanded, then, verse 68, the Lord will bring you back in ships to Egypt, a journey that I promise that you should never make again. And there you shall offer yourselves for sale to your enemies as male and female slaves, but there will be no buyer. Again, God's heart is always to bring His people out of Egypt. Yet, Israel's heart keeps turning back to Egypt. But why? Why would they turn back to this oppression and bondage and all of these awful things that we've just gone through? It's because Egypt makes a lot of promises, yet when the people are there, they are left crying out to God. Egypt symbolizes a false sense of security for the people. In Ezekiel chapter 29, the prophet begins a four-chapter-long prophecy against Egypt. And if you're turning in your Bibles, I love that. But I will also have all the scriptures up on the slides if you just want to follow along there. But I encourage you to follow along with me as well, because there will be some I'll have you turn to. But back to Ezekiel. In Ezekiel chapter 29, the prophet begins this four-chapter-long prophecy. And more specifically, he begins by rebuking their god, Pharaoh. You see, in Egypt, or in ancient times, Pharaoh wasn't just a political leader of sorts, like we would have a president or even a king, an earthly king. He was considered divine. People saw him as the earthly embodiment, actually, of their god Horus, which was like the preeminent God to them, the Most High, Most High. And so he was the embodiment of God, Horus, a living connection between heaven and earth. In fact, at his coronation, he was thought to become a god. And it's to this man that God begins the prophecy. "Behold, I am against you, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, the great dragon that lies in the midst of his streams, that says, 'My Nile is my own, and I made it for myself. I will put hooks in your jaws and make the fish of your streams stick to your scales. And I will draw you up out of the midst of the streams.'" Ending verse 5 with, "I give you as food." Pharaoh in Egypt are a picture of self-reliance that exalts itself against God. But God always holds the real power. The prophet Isaiah also describes Egypt as a source of false sense, or as this false sense of security, in chapter 31, verse 1, saying, "Woe to those who go down to Egypt for help." And backing up to the previous chapter, he continues this in Isaiah 30. In chapter 30, in verse 1, it says, "Stubborn children, stubborn children, declares the Lord, who carry out a plan, but not mine, and who make an alliance, but not of my spirit, and that they may add sin to sin, who set out to go down to Egypt without asking for my direction, to take refuge in the protection of Pharaoh, and to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the protection of Pharaoh turn to your shame, and the shelter in the shadow of Egypt to your humiliation. For though his officials are at Zoan and his envoys reach hands, there everyone comes to shame through a people that cannot profit them, that brings neither help nor profit, but shame and disgrace, an oracle on the beasts of the Negev." In verse 7, "Egypt's help is worthless and empty." Revelation 11 reveals another view of Egypt. In Revelation 11, we see these two characters called witnesses. It's a very interesting chapter. You should go read it. I recommend it. See these two witnesses in Revelation 11, and they're going into the city and they're proclaiming this testimony. They're preaching about things that are good and right and of God. And they go into the city and they're proclaiming to all the people. But the people of the city laugh at them, and then they kill them. And as if they aren't evil enough, these people, they leave the bodies in the street. They don't even pick them up to bury them. And how do the scriptures describe this violently evil place? Verse 8, "And their bodies will lie in the street of the great city that symbolically is called Sodom and" what? "Egypt." Egypt is used as a descriptor for a place of evil oppression. And it's because of the great oppression, it's because of the slavery, it's because of the false sense of security and the arrogance and the opposition to righteousness that we're told in Hosea 11 in verse 1, "Out of Egypt I called my son." And in Zechariah 10 verse 10, "I will bring them home from the land of Egypt." They're not meant to stay there. They're meant to leave. You see, the Lord wanted so badly to bring them out of Egypt because he knew how bad Egypt was. And yes, he wasn't always saving them out of the literal land of Egypt. But since the beginning of Genesis to the end of Revelation, our Father has always been trying to save them from the things that Egypt symbolized. Some of you may be thinking, well, that's not a big deal. I don't deal with Egypt. I don't, I don't have any trouble with Egypt today. I mean, it would actually be kind of hard to deal with Egypt because we live so far away. But I hope you've been able to connect the dots so far that Egypt is still a problem. We still deal with the problems of Egypt today. In Egypt, Israel was enslaved under Pharaoh, and they could not save themselves. If you haven't already, we need to realize that sin is spiritually and even sometimes physically puts us under the oppressive bondage of slavery, just like for Israel. Especially if you're struggling with repetitive sin, you know what it's like to feel enslaved. If you've ever struggled and fought against something that just had hold of you, you know what it's like to feel hopeless. Like, this bondage is so oppressive. I can't get over this. I need help. Sin becomes this thing that you do out of habit, not because you want to do it. In fact, Paul describes this troubling feeling in Romans 7 and verse 15 when he says, "For I do not understand my own actions." How many times have you maybe thought that to yourself? I don't understand why I even do this. "For I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." And in verse 20, "Now if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me." And that's not a caveat saying that you don't have the control but to do it. But in other words, Paul is saying, "I don't want to sin, but because I am a slave to it, I do it." Jesus talks about slavery of sin in a very poetic way in John 8. Here, Jesus has been teaching these truths about himself throughout John's gospel. And he has these statements where he expresses that he, and only he, is things like the bread, the vine, the light, the way. And here in verse 31, he says, "If you abide in my word and are truly my disciples, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Does that confuse you? I don't know about you, but this always kind of confused me, the way he said this. Jesus, what do you mean you are the truth, and how does this set me free? I mean, come on, I've got rights. I feel pretty free. I mean, I'm walking around, and I'm feeling like I can go anywhere I want and do whatever I want. I'm not enslaved to anyone. Well, the Jews responded like that too. They said, wait, in a very similar way, "Wait a minute, Jesus. I mean, we are offspring of Abraham. I mean, come on. We've never been enslaved to anybody. How is it that you say we're going to become free? You know, we're not enslaved." Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin." Sorry for the typo. Here's the fact of the matter. And listen to me when I say this. Sin enslaves us. Sin enslaves us to lives that dishonor God, harm ourselves, and harm those around us. And apart from Christ, we have no way out of Egypt. However, Egypt is not just this place of sin and oppression for us, but just like the children of Israel, it gives us a false sense of security. If you remember from the passages we read earlier in Ezekiel and Isaiah, the children of Israel looked to Egypt as this place of provision. They viewed it as this place that they could go to arm themselves for battle, to get horses specifically, it says. They go down and get those horses for battle, prepare their armies. It was this place that they could go and be nourished during a famine. But if you'll look deeper into the Bible, you'll see that the story does not end there. And Egypt always failed on its promises. And so does the devil with his lies. I mean, how many times have we indulged in sin thinking that it would fix some uncomfortability? That it would fix something that was wrong in our lives? But it just made things worse. Maybe not right in the moment, but a few more steps down the road in time, and it made things worse. We've got some people who might have been students in the past. Everybody's been students. Students now. Cheating. You think that cheating is a shortcut? I'm guilty as charged. I've cheated before. And what I found is that cheating always got me the short end of the deal. It's not a long-term solution to the problem at hand. And it always did more harm than good and gave me harder times. Or maybe we work all the time, seeking the security of money. But in the process, our soul suffers, or our relationship with others do. Or maybe we go back to the addiction thinking that it's going to provide you with something that God didn't. And here we sit, shaking our heads at the children of Israel for longing for cucumbers in Egypt, while they never worried about meat in the wilderness. Egypt will always offer false promises. But as soon as we get there, we will do just like the children of Israel and cry out to our God for help. And so we're reminded that we're called out of Egypt, out of sin, and not to return. And this goes into my last point. This is the reason we're going over these things tonight. You may be wondering what all this comes down to. Egypt is dangerous for our souls, and we need to be reminded of how bad our sin was, where we were, to understand why it's so great that we're focused on the path towards righteousness in heaven now. The Lord so often, before addressing the people of Israel, would remind them that He delivered them out of the hands of Pharaoh. He delivered them from Egypt. And the Lord emphasized that event because of its timeless reminder that they were brought out of Egypt by the Lord's might and not their own. I think it's interesting that Paul says in one place in his letters that the Lord will not give you more than you can bear. And a lot of people stop there. The Lord's not going to give you more than you can bear. I think experientially, we can all attest to feeling like we've been given more than we can bear. But Paul's point, too, that he goes on to say, is that we won't be given more than we can bear without God's help. And I'll tell you, there's nothing that God is unable to help with. Even Egypt, in its great might, was just a fish in a stream to God. And so the Lord emphasizes this. In fact, He emphasized it in a very interesting way. He instituted a feast for the Israelites to observe so that they would constantly remember this event, this exodus out of Egypt. That's what the Passover meal is for. The Lord taught Israel to observe this meal in Exodus 12 and 26, saying, "And when the children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' Or 'What is this meal? What is this Passover meal?' You shall say, 'It is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For He passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when He struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses.'" Passover meal was a reminder to them that God delivered them. And He reminds us of our deliverance from sin too, with the meal. I mean, that's why we take this Lord's Supper. It's not just something that we do. It's to remember that God brought us out of sin. And we're no longer enslaved in Christ because of His blood. And so that's why we as baptized believers eat and drink this meal. It's so that we never forget. So, I hope to remind you this evening that, and maybe you're debating whether you should return to sin or your old habits, or maybe you're not even debating it. Maybe you're just not making provision to not fall again. I encourage you to remember the oppression and slavery you endured in sin. The evil master, the devil who you served. Remember the evil or false promises. Remember when you sinned thinking you were gaining. And remember how the way the world let you down. But more importantly, remember the Father as He sheltered you from the judgment that He gave to His enemies. Remember Isaiah 65 and how the Lord stretched out His hands to you. Remember how He led you with cords of kindness in Hosea through the waters of uncertainty and change. And remember how the Lord has brought you to a much better place. We need to remember Egypt. But more importantly, we need to remember how the Lord called us out from sin, out from Egypt. And so I want to end with a rather lengthy reading in Deuteronomy 6. And while I'm reading this, I want you to listen for how the Lord talks about Egypt. And think about the things that we've talked about tonight and listen to the words that are used and how this ties into sin and bondage and slavery to the evil one who always lets us down. And so if you will, either you can follow along on the slide, or no, you can't. You're going to have to turn in your Bibles to Deuteronomy 6. If you will, follow along with me in Deuteronomy 6. And I'm going to be starting in verse 1. And if you don't turn there, just listen. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over, to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God and your son's son by keeping all His statutes and His commandments, which I commanded you, all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. Hear, therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of our fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that He swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, to give to you with great and good cities that you did not build, and houses full of good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant, and when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And skip with me down to verse 20. When your son asks you in time to come, or when your brothers and sisters ask you in time to come, when your coworkers ask you in time to come, when your kids ask you in time to come, When your parents ask you in time to come, what is the meaning of the testimonies and the statutes and the rules that the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed us signs and wonders great and grievous against Egypt and against Pharaoh and his household before our eyes. And he brought us out from there that he might bring us in and give us a land that he swore to give to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as we are this day. And it will be righteousness for us if we are careful to do all his commandments before the Lord our God as he commanded us. We always offer an invitation at the end of this. But really, God offers you an invitation. And as he always has, that invitation is to come out from Egypt, to come out from sin, and know that you have a way out. If you're sitting here wanting freedom from slavery and sin, remember, if you're in sin, if you have sin, you are a slave. And so if you're a slave seeking freedom, know that there is an answer and it is a way out. And for those that don't know Christ, first you've got to go through water. Remember, when they were coming out of Egypt, when they were exiting, they went through the water into salvation from their oppressor. You must go through the water and die to your old self in Egypt that you can live in God's promises. And for those that know Christ but struggle, we all do. Remember how you were treated in Egypt. Remember how it felt to be in sin. And know that you have brothers and sisters all around you that love you and that want to help you return. The fact of the matter is that Egypt never was the answer. Sin never was the answer, though it may have seemed like it. And so we have to know that Egypt is not the answer. We were brought out of Egypt, and the Lord called us out of Egypt, so that we can bask in his righteousness and be like his son, Christ. Think on these things as we stand and sing the invitation song.